All in preparation for the challenges that lie ahead. This is a show that feeds the mind with inspiration and truth on the issues of the day. If it's important to your life, you'll find it here. Hosted by Malcolm Out Loud.
Well, the mission is being called Operation Phoenix. Retired Delta Force operator and disabled combat veteran Josh Collins is paddleboarding along the coast from Corpus Christi, Texas to New York City. Well, he wants to raise awareness for TBI, traumatic brain injury, and PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, which we've talked about on this show many times, folks, with you. And along the way, he plans, about a dozen rallies. We'll get into that a little bit with him. But I want to welcome Josh Collins, veteran Josh Collins, to the show. And also his wife, Tanya Collins, is joining us. Good afternoon, folks.
Thank you, Malcolm. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you with me. I've read through your story. I've read the releases and some of the stories written on you, and I found them really fantastic. I first found out about you. I want to give credit to OPSEC and Jamie Williamson and those folks over there who always put our veterans first. And that's when I first heard about your story and jumped on it and said, we got to get you on the show and get you on the brink of greatness as well. But, well, Josh, tell me. Let's bring it back to the very beginning. When did you retire? What year?
I retired November of 2008.
2008. Okay, so about 8 years ago or so. And so talk to me a moment. You know, I report all the time on the amount of suicides that are going on out there and our veterans, things that are happening. Like I said, I've had veterans on all the time on PTSD, things we've talked about, discussed, try to find the answers for these things. Tell me what it's like. Coming out of the service like that, and you had been in how many years?
I've been in 20.
20 years, wow. And I know you've been back and forth to Afghanistan, Iraq, all the hot points. I believe Bosnia as well, if I...
Yes, back in those days.
Yeah. So tell me, what's it like coming out of the service like that, first of all, and trying to get your legs back to being a civilian? What's that transition like, brother?
The environment is so different. You just, kind of become attuned to that, to combat operations and to, the environment where everything is of great importance, obviously. And, you're part of something much bigger than yourself, too. Slowing down to, everyday life, that's not an excuse. That's just a reality. You suddenly are just, shocked with this, this cold splash of water that you're going to get a job and it might be as a postman. It's not a national level mission and no one's shooting at you. And, you're not landing and crashing a helo. So it's kind of there's an opening shock, like a parachute. And that opening shock is very abrupt and can be startling. So, I think guys then realize that they start having some of the missing or going through some of the maybe signs and symptoms of post-traumatic stress, but really don't know what that is yet. No one's been there to prepare them for some of these things that are causing harm to our soldiers.
Right. Josh, it almost sounds like the way you describe it. I've never thought of it this way before, but it almost sounds like when you come from the military service again, a civilian life, like you're coming off a drug almost, Right?
Yeah, I think you're coming off of, for the most part,
You're dependent on the military, you're dependent on that lifestyle, yeah. You know that lifestyle, and now it's a whole different world, right?
It's a whole different world. I think it goes a little deeper than that, than just 20 years on the job, 20 years at, Acme Brick Company, and that being all you know. There is the traumatic stress grooves, creates... cuts in the fabric that then have to be mended prior to jumping back into civilian life.
Do you find most military folks have the same problem, Josh?
No. I think many folks do just fine. And I don't know if there's any rhyme or reason to why, two people see the same thing or experience, go through the same event. And, whether that's seeing trauma or being through their own trauma or killing, being shot at, blown up, someone trying to kill you.
Well, everybody's trauma is different, clearly, and the way you perceive that is different. Tanya, I want to ask you, as this was all going on, and, when Josh was in the service, that's one life, and now he's coming out. I'm sure at first you're very excited about it all, But then it seems like things got pretty ugly. And from what I've read in some of the backup story on this, it was pretty challenging, huh?
It was very challenging. You think that everything is going to calm down, and in a sense, it's completely the opposite. Goes to an extreme of unsettledness. I think that the best way to describe it is they have 20 years of adrenaline rush, and then they come out, and their body is in shock from not having that adrenaline flowing any longer, and their bodies are damaged from that. All of their, it's like a chemical imbalance.
Right.
And then you have to try to work to figure out what's going on. And then once you, at the years later, after you realize that that's what's happening, you have to start to try to heal that body. And the mind.
Amen, amen. Josh, you got pretty involved in, from what I've read again, I think drinking and medication and stuff like that, yeah?
Yes, yes. Yeah.
And that kind of, I mean, that's going to mess you up even further, obviously. You can only go so far with that stuff also. So, but then it comes to a turning point, and I want to talk about that turning point ahead. And, you know, I am just amazed at people that I speak to like you, Josh, who I'm just thrilled that take on some of the biggest challenges in their life. And these are what I call the brink thinkers of our generation, and people who, you know, look this fear in the eye and, I don't know, just able to turn it all around. And I really applaud you. Of course, I applaud all of our service members and our military who I think are some of the most outstanding citizens we have. And anyways, we're going to talk further with Josh and Tanya Collins in just a moment. This is Real Life.
Get your home organized now with Closets by Design and get 40% off plus free installation. To schedule a free in-home design consultation, call 1-800-BY-DESIGN or visit closetsbydesign.com for more details.
We are back joining you this afternoon. It is Malcolm Out Loud here, and I'm joined with Tanya and Josh Collins. And Josh, you've been hearing the story in our first segment, our opening segment. And so he's in the service, and he retires 20 years, comes out, and it's a challenge. We talk about this. We talk about the struggles. You had a problem, Josh, with not just PTSD, which most of us are familiar with PTSD, but you don't hear a lot about TBI as well. And you had a series of concussions and problems that went along with this. How bad did it get, Josh?
That was probably the worst. You know, interestingly enough, you know, a soldier served his country, whether that's 4 years or 24 years. And when they go to get out, so they're doing great things for Uncle Sam. They go to get out and they are either discharged or they retire and they get this VA, medical, and suddenly they have PTSD. Well, you know, that's kind of what we're looking here. As a survivor, my mission is to encourage and inspire their veterans, and especially those who are facing that down the challenge of living with and adapting to TBI, because it can then start to mimic maybe the PTSD side. There's the movie Concussion that just came out.
Yeah, we've seen it. Did you see it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And
pretty riveting.
Riveting and hard for me to watch. I mean, because
right.
It was, you know, that what goes on is, who am I? I mean, you start forgetting, you know, the things that if you woke up tomorrow and you were no longer, you didn't have Malcolm Out Loud.
Right.
You know, but you couldn't remember how to do it. Well, you start questioning everything. So
there are days I'd like to forget my name, buddy.
Exactly.
Until you do.
Exactly. It's not funny then, Tanya, right?
No, it's not. Your world starts crashing down.
No, I hear you. It's no laughing matter at all. So all this is going on, and you're struggling with all this. And, you know, that's one of the things, Josh, not to go too far down this road here, but I got to touch on it real quickly, because I've been a really outspoken person against the Veterans Administration and some of the work of our government. And, again, back to when you said, you know, as a military hero, I mean, you know, you're not so much doing it for Uncle Sam. You're doing it for the American people. You know, you're doing it for really this is the heart of America, really. I think, again, it's the same thing with our law enforcement, Josh. It's why I celebrate law enforcement so much. In fact, right. It's one of the new shows on America Out Loud, Police Radio, with Lieutenant Randy Sutton. And because we celebrate law enforcement and our police departments and our EMT, and just as we do. And these are the heroes. These are the real heroes, you know?
Yeah, yes. They completely, every day.
I'm in awe of it, and I really am. I can't say enough, my friend. I would do anything for our vets and our people, our law enforcement. I have such, I can't explain it to you, but I get chills when I talk about it, think about it. I always did, always do. It's just, I just see these folks as the real heroes, the men and women who do it. And I understand it. I really, really understand it. But so you have all this going on. You sink to the low point now. What was the turning point, Josh? What did it? Before this all started with Phoenix and all of this and the paddle board, which I think Tanya ended up getting the first one for you. But tell me, what was the turning point?
I think it was... you know, I began to cry out for help. I was a special operations instructor as a contractor, and I started making mistakes in private, and I, you know, kind of went to folks and said, hey, I think I'm having a really hard time here. And there were cries for help like that that kind of, you know, somebody went, yeah, you know, it happens to the best of us. And, you know, and so I kind of stepped aside for a little bit. But there were... You know, everything went to extremes. You know, I'd stay up for all day or sleep for 12 hours. Or, I mean, it just became, my driving habits were, you know, very, very fast, you know, and I became very reckless.
Kind of careless. I was just going to say a little bit careless. Tanya, you kind of seen all that develop that way. What did you think?
I was very scared. I would, as a matter of fact, we owned businesses at the time and ran those, and it got to the point where I wouldn't even go into the businesses. I would stay at home so that I could be with him and watch him because of how nervous I was. He would take his nighttime medicine during the day and his daytime medicine during the night.
Wow.
Even when I would tell him not to take them, that I would give them to him. He would forget and take them, or he'd take them twice.
By accident.
And this was, yeah, completely by accident.
It's not something you want to do.
Right. No, I hear you. Yeah.
And then, of course, then he would drink, and he would tell me he wasn't drinking. He would sneak off, and he would drink. He would get lost coming home. I would be following him, and he would turn down a road, and I would call him and say, where are you going? And he'd say, I'm going home. Well, it wasn't even the way home. So he wouldn't even know how to get home. And we always had to make sure he had a GPS in the car to make sure he could find his way home. So it was a very, very scary time for us. And then finally, for me, it came down to, you know, when he was having the issues at work, and then I was spending every moment with him, and we had our kids in college, and I just felt like I was completely overwhelmed.
How many children do you have, Tanya?
We have four children, and they're all in college.
Oh, wow, wow. And they were seeing all this, obviously.
They were seeing all this, the anger, the outbursts.
Right.
They were scared. They didn't feel like they could talk to him. And so I finally called Special Operations Command, or the CARE Coalition, and asked for help. I said, I will take him anywhere in the world on a moment's notice if you can get us there for help.
Were they responsive?
Immediately. This was on a Friday, and
awesome.
We were in North Carolina at the time, and they had us at the Tampa VA on that Sunday. They flew us to Tampa, and he was admitted to the VA on that Monday. And the Polytrauma Center in Tampa, which I have to say is a very good VA. And I would say it's not for life, the VA. It is definitely a great triage to get you stabilized until you can get your life back.
Interesting, and I'm glad to hear the kudos on it, because you hear so many war stories. It's so great to hear that it went well. If I read the backstory right, in 2014 there was a 3-month. That was the time I think you're talking about, 3-month hospitalization, right?
That's correct.
I see. Okay, so was that kind of the turning point of this thing?
That was it.
That's it. Yeah.
That was huge turning point. But at the same time, that really was just to get a foothold back into life. Mm-hmm. And then, man, that's that really started all the hard work. Mm-hmm. You know, that's when, and then even beyond that, that's when I started having some seizures. And that's when you kind of, with brain injury, that's when you kind of go, okay, this is not just being forgetful. This is, you know, your brain is now in control.
You got a bigger problem. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So you come out of this thing now in 2014, and here you are. You've just come through this, you know, wild experience, Josh. And where does the idea come from now to do this? How does this develop? And then, and bring me into the Task Force Dagger Foundation as well. But bring me forward on that. How does it happen?
Sure. You know, I guess after about 2 months there in the hospital, I really began to think about, okay, what am I going to do now? I kind of thought back to just kind of who I am. I was, I think I was 10 and my mom ran the Orange Bowl Marathon. And I said, Mom, I'm going to do that next year. And sure enough, you know, I told my dad to make sure he wake me up. He woke me up and we went down. And at 11 years old, I ran the Orange Bowl Marathon. It's just kind of that matter of fact in terms of, I want to row around the world. I want to do something that's never been done before, that's dangerous, that's, you know, epic. People die doing this, and there's of the very few that have attempted. And then I had somebody say, let's put something a little more doable together right up front, maybe build some credibility. So that's where we came up with the stand-up paddleboard instead.
The stand-up paddleboard. So it's a stand-up paddleboard. So, I mean, I looked at it. I see. So you're standing on this. I mean, there's nothing really holding you to it, is there?
Right. No, that's it. You're standing.
It's crazy. I mean, I look at it. I see it. How far off the coast are you when you're going? How far off?
Sometimes, typically between about 2 to 5 miles.
That far?
Yeah, I've crossed some bays and some open areas now where you can't see the other side when you leave.
Right.
And you lose sight of the shore before you see the other side. And so we're talking, you know, 15 miles.
Now, now answer me this. I didn't know this. Why 2 to 5 miles off the coast versus being closer to the coast? Is there a reason?
You know, I prefer to be closer to the coast. It's just the contour of the shoreline.
I see.
So it's, you know, I think they call it the Pythagorean theorem, you know, better to go the straight across than.
Okay. Than to follow the entire, like, nitty gritty, huh?
Right.
I see. So you're kind of, and so sometimes you're closer, sometimes you're further out, right?
Yes.
Dependent. Okay.
And also, if I'm really bored and I want to see some wildlife, depending on where we're at, I get real close to the shore.
Okay.
A lot of it sits there. And then if I'm looking for bigger wildlife, then I get further.
All right. So far, tell me, I know you're on the journey. You're in the midst of this journey. I understand that. And of course, people are going to be hearing this over a period of time. So, where you're at right this moment doesn't even really matter in the scope of it because your journey is going to be complete, not too far ahead. But tell me, with all of this, thus far, what is the most dangerous moment you've had?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
The beginning? The
yeah, the start. We went through some rough seas right up front. It was a real test of, do you want to get this done? There was folks that wanted to go out for 5 days with me that they, you know, quickly were saying, I didn't sign on to risk my life. And, it came back down to me real quick. It was like, wow, wake up call. And, it was painful. It hurt. And then the Coast Guard called me out of the water, about the third day.
They called you out of the water. Wow. Oh, all right. That was the signal there, huh? So I would imagine, 5 to 8 miles off, the waves can get pretty rough, no?
That's right. And so when I went back into, while I'm out there, we were at 6 foot seas. And I knew it was 6 foot seas because when you're standing on a paddleboard and you dip down and you can't see over,
right?
You can no longer see the shore.
So how do you stand on a board that is that thin and it's 6 foot seas and stay on it? How do you do that?
You know, I think people are very athletic that do that. My thing is
what?
Because of the number of traumatic brain injuries, I have so much, balance issues in terms of, everything related to balance is broken. So my eyes, I've had nerve damage in each eye and surgery. So I have diplopia. I wear corrective lenses. I have double vision. My vestibular system, my inner ear, is about 80% damaged in each ear. And then I've got cervical spine compression. So everything, and a few spine. So everything related to balance is messed up. But when I got on a paddleboard at the Tampa VA for the first time, just a year and a half ago, the world stood still because the water moving under me.
So you had never been on a paddleboard before that. That was the first time. And Tanya, you bought the first one, right?
I did. After he was discharged from the hospital, he was he talked about how much he liked it and how everything was comfortable. And
because he tried it at there. Yeah, I see.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Wow. Well, I tried to envision myself doing this. When I see your pictures and I read the story, I think, okay, so what would I do? How could I do that? What's the most dangerous moment? You know, do you come face to face with any sharks or any creatures or critters or, you know, in the south area, any other serious wildlife? Have you done any of that?
Absolutely. So I've seen a few sharks, a few little sharks, not really big so far in Florida. But Louisiana, there were some stretches where whatever side of the river I was on, I'd paddle close to the edge because sometimes I'm going against the current.
Right.
And the gators would kind of hear me about, 20 feet out. And, you know, big gator takes a moment to move, and then they would launch out into the water. So I was, you know, 10, 12 feet from shore. And then this enormous gator, and I'm talking, there were a couple, there was one that was bigger than my board.
Yeah, I can imagine, man. He obviously was eating his Wheaties. Hold that thought right there, Josh and Tanya Collins. What a story, man. We've got to take a quick station break here. We'll be right back. This is Real Life. Be right back with you. Well, it is Real Life. This is Malcolm Allow here. We're talking to Josh and Tanya Collins. And speaking of veteran Josh Collins, about this extraordinary, extraordinary journey up the coast from Corpus Christi, Texas, to the Statue of Liberty. And you know where that is, folks, New York City. And again, he was saying he's about 2 to 5 miles out from the coast in most times, and it just depends how the coast is. And we were talking about the most dangerous moment you had, Josh, before the break here, and with the, you know, again, I was thinking these big alligators, crocodiles kind of thing through Louisiana, yeah, and sharks and things. And so you got to stand. This is a paddle board now you're standing on. I've looked at these things, folks, and they look pretty narrow. I don't have real good balance myself, Josh, so I've tried to think of myself as like you. All right, what would I do? How would I do this, you know, and would I be able to hold my balance and what have you? And I think it's got to be tricky. How many times have you fallen in the water? That's what I want to know.
Oh, that's daily. That's the thing. It's a stand-up paddleboard. It's right. Designed to fall off, and that's why they put the water there. So yeah. that's all part of the fun.
Now, but when you fall, I got to ask you this. When you fall into the water, do you get nervous at that moment?
You've never seen, like, I hit a hot frying pan. I mean, my legs curl up from under me. I have visions of
John. I know. I would be the same way, but brother.
Gators, yeah.
Yeah, thank you, because you kind of want to keep that all in play there, right?
Right. And then we do. And then when that happens at night, you know, it's twice as fast. Almost like I fall in and I just bounce off the top of the water.
Josh, let me ask you this, and I don't mean to. I'm trying to remember if I read this. You've lost a limb already, did you not?
Oh, no.
You didn't. Okay. I don't know why I thought you might have. And I wasn't sure. All right. So you want to keep them all then, right?
Yes, please.
God love you.
Speaking of and sharks.
All right. So you fall back in and you get out as quick as you can and get back up on the board, right?
Right. And regain composure.
Okay, right. And so, you know, so every hour it's not uncommon to fall off the board, right?
You know, that's the thing is, like, during rough seas, I've experienced a couple of those here lately, when it gets really rough and you're getting beat up anyway and lots of movement and then you start falling in, a lot of times that it's fatigue and then, you know, you're just not able to keep up. It's just
Josh, this is pretty dangerous. Now, I got to tell you, Tanya, you realize how dangerous this is, obviously.
I do. Yes.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you both. When I first looked at your story and I seen some of the things you sent me, Tanya, I didn't see – that wasn't the first thing that came to my mind. I have to – honestly, because you don't really say that in there. And I wonder if you shouldn't say that, because what I'm saying is – I got the feeling that you were, like, really close to the coast. Like, there wasn't too much of a danger. But, hell, I got to tell you, 5 to 8 miles off the coast sometimes with six-foot waves and things going on, trying to stand on that board, and you've got critters all around you from afar and from a near, that's got to be a whole other look, huh?
Well, we try really hard to check the wind and waves.
Yeah.
And don't usually let him out there more than, try not to let him go out more than 2 foot seas. A few more than that occasionally, but that was the beginning, and those 6 foot seas came up quickly in the Bay Area of Corpus Christi during that big storm, and he was out there.
Oh boy, yeah. I mean, you really are risking your life with that. I understand that. Have you always been good in the water? Are you in fear of the water, or good in the water as in a natural instinct way, sort of, Josh? Or do you know?
I've always been around the water. You know, I grew up in Miami in the water, and I was on water teams when I was in the military. So
okay, so it's not a fear item for you then.
I'm a scuba diver.
Oh, all right.
No, it's just all the movies I watched as a kid. You know, Piranha, Jaws.
You know,
scared of the water.
Well, you know,
scared of the dark.
That's the thing. Fear is such a big thing. I talk about that a lot on my shows, my production, and you know, a lot of the times it's not the problem that's going to get us; it's the fear, don't you think?
Oh, completely. And fear is an amazing thing. There's such very little difference. The difference between the coward and the hero is, you know, the hero steps forward. The hero steps into the arena.
Yeah.
Coward one. It's just one step.
God bless you for all the work you're doing here and putting yourself out there. I tell you, you have just, I mean, I'm really, I can't even have the words to say I'm really in awe, and I think most people will be. And that's not, and you don't, you know, that's not for you to comment back on, because I know you don't really want to say that back. But, you know, you have to know that people really appreciate what you're doing here and the light you're shining on our veterans. And now tell me about Task Force Dagger, how they came into this and what they're doing and who they are.
Yeah, the Task Force Dagger Foundation was started by Keith and Colleen David. They're an organization that really fills the gap. So, you know, one of their first programs is, and they have three programs that go together. And the first is immediate needs. And so they kind of fill the gap where, you know, the government or other insurances, they take care of the families, you know, where, you know, the VA doesn't. And the next thing is recreational therapy events, which after that immediate needs typically, you know, kind of become part of that Task Force Dagger, you know, group, then you, or family, then recreational therapy events kind of bring you back to the light of life.
And brings the family back together, right, as well.
And treatment for the spouse and the kids. And then the last thing is the Soft Health Initiatives program, and that's modalities that involve functional medicine, kind of get off the drugs, get off the pharmaceuticals, and there really are some state-of-the-art treatments that are working.
It's safe to say that this is kind of changing your life, isn't it?
Yeah, the whole process.
Yeah.
I went from go home and take your meds, which, you know, meant, you know, getting handed a pill cup from my wife, to how do we fix something? Because I felt like it was killing me. It wasn't fixing me. And then there's other people dying around me.
Right, right. I bet you now, each day, do you look forward to getting out on the water?
I do. I'm so excited about this mission. You know, we've got a lot of money that we've got to raise to help the.
Yeah, tell me what you're trying to do and how folks can help and where to get you. Give me all the points there.
Yeah, my mission is for the guys in the special operations community primarily. And basically the 7,500 of them that are, you know, out there, you know, retired and maybe on the watch list for different things, that they can get the type of treatments that have saved my life. And then the second thing would be increased investment in some state-of-the-art protective equipment. And the reason that's important, and I know we're leaning towards that way, but in the same time frame as these wars, the NFL has identified and recognized chronic traumatic encephalopathy, a head injury, and they've taken steps to mitigate. They've got new equipment, and this is the NFL, and we're talking about, you know, for our veterans and protecting our soldiers. And then finally, increased availability for the functional medicine modalities that work and getting guys off the off the meds.
Fantastic. So what kind of dollars are you trying to raise overall?
I'm trying to raise $22
million. $22
million? So that starts with, and basically I think that's an average cost of about $3,000 to $4,000 per soldier when you talk about.
That's for 70, that treats 7,500.
Yeah, that's 7,500 soldiers.
Over 5 years.
Wow, I mean, it's incredible. So do I mean, where are you early on in that raise, or where, are you anywhere along the line, or you just starting?
No, you know, with Operation Phoenix, you know, this is sort of to, one, to build credibility. I can do something like this, and then this will expand into Veteran Voyage 360, and that's the global row, where, you know, the sponsors, instead of just boat paddle boards, who are phenomenal and awesome, they put in about $100K. Instead of folks like them, we'll be looking at Google and, you know, insurance companies, and it'll be much bigger.
And get Facebook, too. They get a lot of money.
Right.
That's right.
And Skype.
Especially as much as we're putting out there.
That's exactly it. Yeah, that's it. Get them all, man. They got the pockets. You know, that's the way it should be. The private sector should be helping our heroes out in our vets. I totally agree with it. I don't want the government involved in this stuff. Let these companies, organizations step up, you know?
Right.
Yeah, we don't, you know, I think the tendency is to think that the government and the military are responsible and are doing their job, and if that was so, we wouldn't have 22 guys a day killing themselves.
Right. Well, what an absolutely amazing story. So again, let's get Tanya the contact points again. Give me Twitter, Facebook, website. How do they find you?
Facebook, we're Veteran Voyage 360, and our website is www.veteranvoyage360.com, and on Twitter we are OPPHX1, and we are on Instagram as Veteran Voyage 360.
Okay, fantastic. I'll get all the connecting points too in the post and all the show notes on this thing as well.
Malcolm.
Yes, sir.
And if we can include the Task Force Dagger Foundation website, which is where, you know, guys can go right now if they need to talk to somebody to get some help.
Yeah, you'd speak very highly of them in your notes. I read that, Josh. You really do. You give them good kudos, and I appreciate that. What's their website? TaskForceDagger.com, is it?
TaskForceDagger.org.
All right, perfect, perfect. TaskForceDagger.org. And, yeah, we'll definitely give them kudos and a shout-out and all of this. So this is really good. All right, Josh, you know, listen, I know you're going to – so the vision now, to wrap up here with you, the worldwide vision. So you get up in New York in what, June, is it? July?
July 23rd is the –
that's the
date. Pray to God date.
Wow. And in the meantime, you guys are dedicating all your time and life and everything. And Tanya, you're on the side, you're on the road on it with a, like an RV or something, Tanya?
I am, okay. Yes.
And that's where you're driving all the way up with them. You're every step of the way here, huh?
Yes, that's correct.
She is my lifeline.
Yeah, obviously both of you are. You know, just absolutely amazing. God bless you both. And just truly, truly an amazing, amazing story. You are what I call a brink thinker, Josh Collins, in every aspect. And I just love the term. I love the brink of greatness. We will certainly put your story and what you've done and what you're doing. And to take this worldwide is incredible. And I'm going to follow you through the whole journey. You know, in fact, when you get back after July, I'd love to have you guys, both of you, come in studio and be with me in the television production and do a show. That would be very cool, something there afterward, maybe in between things.
That would be awesome.
A lot of opportunities here ahead to help you folks out, and I wish you all the best. We'll get the credits and the contact points. You can find them on the site on America Out Loud on the network, folks. Again, this is what I talk about all the time with you. This is real life, and it's also about finding the greatness in everybody. And I got to tell you what, my friends out there, there's a lot of good news out there. Nobody's talking about it. People do exist like Josh Collins. I tell you that all the time. And there's a lot of good in the world. By far, people are good, and you just got to find it. It's out there, man. You just don't find it on the 6 o'clock news, but you'll find it here. I can tell you that much right now. Thanks, Josh. Tanya?
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Malcolm.
You'll be telling your story again. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Thanks for joining me. Remember, get involved, get loud.